Hi, I'm Marion McPartland. My guests today on Piano Jazz are composer-pianist Carla Bley and bassist-composer Steve Swallow. And they're two of the most exciting and innovative musicians I know. They keep winning numerous awards and playing and recording all over the world and writing new music all the time. Now, I could go on and on, but I think it's better I should let you both talk about your music and your lives. Carla and Steve, it's great to see you both.
Yeah, it's great for us too, Marion. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. Carla, you've got the most interesting record covers, and then what's inside is fabulous.
Thank you.
Enjoying your music.
Well, we've been enjoying your show. We listen every Sunday night except in football season.
Oh, well, I guess that's okay. I really don't know where to begin. What with all your compositions, both of you, and playing and recording. Maybe, Carla, I should start with you a little bit because I was reading your background and fascinating. Oakland, California.
A lot of good musicians have come from Oakland. A lot at the time, I thought San Francisco was the only decent city to be from on the West Coast, so I would say I was from San Francisco. But then later, Oakland became quite famous, and we had Hell's Angels and Black Panthers, and what else did we have? I forget.
I think that's about it.
Well, you've had a lot, but you know, it's fascinating to me. I read that your father was a minister, that, you know, your life as a youngster was music and religion, and I sort of got the feeling that maybe you rebelled early on and went off and became a roller skating champ.
I rebelled when I was 12.
Well, that's sort of getting to, that's when you started roller skating, isn't
yes.
it? Yes. I think that's wonderful, from roller skating to playing piano in bars.
Yeah.
It all sounds so glamorous.
Well, you know, the rink was close to the house. If it had been a bowling alley, I suppose I would have become a bowler for a few years. It was the neighborhood thing to do.
Well, but then how did you get into playing music?
My father was a piano teacher. And I've been playing since I was about 3 years old. It just came with the territory. I got free lessons.
But then the writing, I guess, what happened? Did you come to New York?
No, I started writing when I was about 5.
Really?
But it was just because I had seen music that I had to study and play during my piano lessons, and I thought, why couldn't I do that? Who did that? Somebody did that. So I took a piece of blank manuscript paper, and I covered it with little black dots, and I gave it to my father at the next lesson. He said, that's too many dots. So I erased half of them, and that's how I started.
That's fantastic, because some of your music is so, I want to say far out. I'm trying to think of a better word. It's so interesting and different that you almost think that sometimes you just did put abstract dots on a page and play them.
And then take half of them away. Very important.
Well, before we go any further, it would really be fun to hear the two of you do one of the newer pieces. You've got something very new.
We have our newest duet. It wasn't written this year. It was written about 15 years ago, but it's just been arranged for Steve and I to play as an opener for all of our concerts next year. And we will premiere it right here on the show. And that's, cross our fingers while playing.
Well, that's going to make for an interesting effect.
Yes, it will.
Sure, indeed.
The name of the piece is Major. Thank you.
Well, I mean, there must be about 10 different time signatures in that thing.
Yeah.
Now, is that something that you took some time to write and put together? You had to rehearse that a lot, I would think.
It was really hard for me and Steve to learn to play it. I think this we had to play it about 100 times before we could get it right and then memorize it as well, so we wouldn't be reading a scrap of paper. But when it was done 15 years ago, it was quite easy to play, to sight read, except nobody could solo on it. The hard part is soloing on a bar of four and a bar of three constantly like that. It'd drive you crazy.
But you did do it.
We love that feeling of being like driven a little beyond our abilities, I guess, morbidly.
Well, it's very exciting to listen to. Now, incidentally, how long have you two been together? It's quite a few years now, isn't it?
Going on 10. Or did we just pass 10? I
think it's been 35, 10. Steve. What do you mean, 10?
What she said.
But you've done so much together, so much wonderful.
We met 35 years ago when he was a young student at Yale, and he quit school the day after he met me and became a musician. I feel a little bit responsible. And then we both married someone else and had children and then got back together about 10 years ago.
So that's how it all happened.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was thinking somewhere along the line, I must have met you. All the things you did, you were at the jazz gallery and you were a camera girl at Birdland.
Yeah, and I was a rabbit girl at Birdland. I mean, carrying stuffed animals, trying to sell them.
Oh, rabbit girl. Oh, right, they had a tray,
yeah,
for
tray,
the tourists carrying
stuff.
Oh, because I was in there constantly, and I must have met you. And then Steve and I met, I don't remember exactly, but when I was still at the Hickory House in the 50s. In fact, didn't you work there with me a little while at the Hickory House?
Yes, yes, very
with
briefly.
Pete LaRocca?
Yep.
And
we
then
did,
we went
indeed.
To Columbus, Ohio. And, you know, Carla, I've always known Steve as a very funny guy, and I just keep thinking of, we were in some Midwestern town, I guess maybe Indianapolis or somewhere, and it was snowing. It was very slippery, and he guided me chivalrously across a big street, and I said, oh, thank you very much, Steve, for helping. And he says, well, I must help you. You're my meal ticket, you know.
I remember. That was not a joke.
No, I know. I should have had you around in recent years with slipping and sliding all over the place. Well, I don't know where to go from one to the other of you. Maybe the answer to this is to have you both play another of your things. So what can you come up with?
Well, here's something I wrote for Sonny Rollins 20 years ago. He never played it, so we're playing it instead.
What's it called?
King Corn.
Okay. Thank you. are so funny. Like the music is very quirky, but it's interesting. And I mean, you have to listen, and then you get little bits of. Did you stick Tifa 2 in there?
I got rhythm.
Rhythm. Yeah, right, right. Do you sit down and take time to write all this out, and it comes in your head, and you sit at the piano?
I think King Corn was one of those pieces I wrote in about 20 minutes.
Really?
But then what came afterwards, the arrangement, is what took time. It used to be played on free by people. Like my first husband would just, you know, play the head and then play free for 20 minutes and then play the head. But when I got into chord changes through Steve about 10 years ago, I decided I wanted to learn to play rhythm changes because that's really a learning situation. It's where you learn to maneuver around these very quickly passing changes. And so I put rhythm changes right after the head instead of going into playing free. And it happened to be an E-flat. Now, as a budding piano player, that's a hard key to play rhythm in, but I did chose it anyway. And then when it came time for Steve, he wanted to play in C, so he got to play in C. And then we traded eights, and then we traded fours, and then we got down to little two-bar bits at the end. And that was so, it happened so quickly, I had to write out those phrases because we couldn't think that fast. And then we played the head again at the end.
You know what's interesting to me? You write complex kind of things. And some of the things, Steve, that you've written are quite simple, like to an extent, like the tune that you have that's so popular, Falling Grace.
It's a simple song. It really is. I think we do have different styles and I guess different objectives to some extent too. I think what I do is to just write serviceable structures for improvisers, you know. And I have a lot of sympathy I have a lot of sympathy for improvisers, and that's a wonderful thing to, as a player, I know the pleasure there is in being given a structure that's fun to play on. It's not such a it's not so often that you get one, a structure that seems to play itself, that kind of falls naturally under your fingers. So I'll go through a sort of agony to get a structure that's nice to play on. But I think Carla's intentions are far deeper and more complex than mine. She's after something that I only dimly understand.
Oh, I show no mercy to players whatsoever.
Well, do you know what you're after? I mean, when you're doing it, do you think to yourself, this is what, or do you hear in your head some of the stuff that, like, for instance, you've got one piece that I really am fascinated by. I think it's called Bird of Paradise, or the one that they played at Carnegie Hall, A Cage at Sea.
On the stage in Cages.
On the stage in Cages. And then that sort of goes into Bird of Paradise. But in one of those pieces, there's this trombone player, like, hooting away on one note. It's so dramatic in that piece.
Well, he chose that note. He likes to be irritating.
Well, but it knocks me out.
Oh, I love it.
In that piece. I love it, too. And then there comes a very soft part where there's... It's like a violin player playing all alone, and the whole thing it's hard to describe. People listening to us talk, they really should hear that piece because it's got a lot of fire and passion and sympathy and poignant parts in it.
Yeah, I think that's the best piece I ever wrote, but I can't play it anywhere because it requires a big band and a violin, and it's just too unwieldy, and
fabulous. I want to hear that piece played. I just love it. In fact, I lie on the living room floor with cushions, sort of doing exercises, and just lying there listening to that thing. I listen to it over and over again. God, that piece has to be played.
Well, I
has
hope
to be
so.
Played. Well, I'm you ranting
do,
on.
You ought to do an exercise video and use it as the
that would
as
be
the
bizarre.
I'd enjoy it.
You know what? I started to get into your pieces, Steve, and one you recorded that was really nice, Carnation. Maybe we could play that.
Sure, let's do.
That's a very pretty piece. Carla, perhaps you could play a little backup or something on this.
I will.
For
I'll
us.
Put my 2 cents in there.
Great.
It's great. I love to see people scurry about it at my bidding.
Well, I was scurrying about at your bidding because those changes go by so fast. I mean, the melody part is kind of slow. I mean, it just. But when you get to the improvising part, it keeps changing like that. I felt like I was leapfrogging over a stile or something.
It is. I think it's like a hurdle. Course, that song, which you executed beautifully. We have a sort of exercise motif going on now here, I think.
Oh, I love that, though. That's a very pretty piece. And that sort of aptly describes what you were saying, how you put together a reasonable kind of melody for people to then improvise on.
Yeah, that's really my tactic is to kind of think ahead when I'm writing to what would suit the improviser.
Oh, this is so great. It's an embarrassment of riches having two people who write and play and talk and are funny. My guests are Carla Bley and Steve Swallow. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz. you've worked with so many different groups, and I keep coming back to one that you worked with years ago, Art Farmer, because that's where I heard one of Carla's songs, Sing Me Softly, of the blues. And it seems to me that maybe you were the instigator. Did you lay that on Art Farmer and say, why don't you play this song?
Yes, I did. by then, I was bringing Carla's music around with me wherever I went. I also introduced her music to Gary, subsequently to Gary Burton, who played a lot of it, including the Genuine Tong Funeral. I think I had the virus of Carla's music, and I was infectious for life. So a lot of the bands that I worked with ended up playing songs of hers.
Isn't it great to have somebody have a lifelong virus for your music?
Yeah.
That's cute. But anyway, what I would really like to do is play it, and Steve and I can play it. Or maybe you don't want to get in it. I know, because you've said, Carla, that you've played this tune too many times or something.
You know how that is.
Well, I suppose it's like Duke Ellington and Satin Doll. But yeah. She's grinning
it
away
must be.
Here.
She's having a wonderful time.
Let's play the tune.
Putting us on the griddle. Okay, let's play it.
Yeah, she really is. Yeah. Let's play it.
Thank you.
That was beautiful, Marion, just beautiful.
Now I know why people like that song.
You know, it's such a long time since you and I played together, Steve. It's such a pleasure.
But it is like riding a bicycle, you know. Once you've played well together, you can always get it back, I think. Don't you find that's
true? Oh, definitely. Although, you know, this is funny because when you and I played together, you had the upright bass and you swore you would never play electric bass.
Vehemently, almost daily, I swore I'd never touch one.
Well, see, it just shows one should never say never, because here you are and you've won countless downbeat polls as the leading exponent of the electric bass.
Well, I'm no dummy.
Well, I think you've legitimized it because, you know, you get such a good sound, and either way, it's really a kick playing with you, Steve, and that is a wonderful song, and it's sort of a blues, and yet it isn't. To me, it's just a love song. Anyway, you know something we haven't done, Carla, is play something, just you and I. And you were talking earlier about having a one-minute piece that you composed.
Yeah, I wrote it for a classical pianist, although it doesn't sound like anything different than my usual type of music. And it happens to be one of 8 romantic notions. It's romantic notion number 3.
And this, well, if you play them all together, I mean, it's like 8 one-minute pieces.
That's why they're called notions, you know, like notions. Well, romantic notions, of course, means having an idea that isn't really true that you really believe in or you want to really believe in. But also it means like notions at the 5 and dime store, little tiny things, little pins, little spools, little thread things. And so they're called notions because it's 8 very short pieces.
But it's a great idea. I love it. And I love the way she looks at you, Steve, when she's saying, you must be in there, you must be a notion.
I like to think of myself as one, yes.
Or more than just a notion. But I'm dying to hear this, and then maybe you and I will do something afterwards.
Well, then you have to play a one-minute piece, too.
All right.
A notion of your own.
A notion of all my own. All right, I'm game for that. Goodness, that sure is a romantic notion. I'm forming my own conclusions. Anyway, now I'm going to do my piece, and I'm going to call it Instant Romance.
Thank you.
I didn't time it, but, you know, the romance was over.
Quickie,
yeah. Well, you know what? Now we've each done our little solo. Let's do something together. A freestyle piece of some kind. You've got an idea for, like, a starting off?
Well, if anyone had asked me what is a good two-piano piece, the first thing I would think of was the original two-piano piece, Chopsticks. That's what two people stand next to each other and play on the piano. However, we have two pianos.
All right. Here goes.
Okay, who starts?
Oh, I'm not. That's going to be a mystery.
Okay.
Fabulous.
Yes, that was great. I show's over. Who's going to follow that? Certainly not I.
I'm so relieved to find out I can play with you, you know, because your stuff is so unusual, and a lot of it is off the wall, and I thought, well, can I fit in?
I thought you were a little more off the wall than I was.
We have a pot and a kettle here speaking to each other, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm just happy. The thing is, it's always a source of wonder to me to have things end together like that without nodding or making faces or anything.
Yeah, and a funny place, too. That was a funny place. We value our humor, and we got some there.
Well, you two are some of the funniest people, both musically and as people. I mean, it's a shame we're not on television so that I can't show some of your photographic humor, like your cover where you're walking decorously along the lane, and then the back cover has you running like fiends.
Not so decorously.
Yeah. Oh, I just remembered something. When you were playing the upright bass and your parents came to the Embers, remember being there?
Yep.
And your mother said, you look so indecorous when you're playing.
Yeah, that'd be Mom. Yep.
But that's so funny because you just looked like you were into it and having a good time.
Yeah, I thought of it as,
you know, but it's funny. Parents, my father once said to me, there was this stride piano player in England who played real ragtime, Winifred Atwell, and I was practicing or playing, trying to play some jazz or something. My father says, I can't understand what you're doing. Why can't you play like Winifred Atwell? Oh, I was just crushed.
Yes, but then that happened to me too. Someone once said to me when I was a kid, why can't you play like Marion McPartland?
Oh, you're joking.
I'm not. It's in print.
Oh, well, I'm glad you didn't follow the advice.
Well, I tried, but that was hard. That was a hard menu.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'm going to try and play like you, because after hearing that Bird of Paradise, you know, there's so much in music there to be explored, isn't there, when you have all those instruments and knowing what to do with them to get... I mean, you must have feelings of emotion when you hear that, when it's finished, or when you're doing it even. Are you trying to, like, create a certain emotion?
The emotion that I feel musically is, if it's good, I'm happy, and if it's not good, I'm sad. That's about where the emotional content of a performance of mine begins and ends, really. No, when I'm playing a piece, if it sounds good, I'm really happy. But that was a failed string quartet. I was trying to write a string quartet, and after 1 year, decided I couldn't write one. I better do what I knew how to do well, which was big band. So I had a lot of violin melodies that I couldn't get rid of because they were just violin melodies. Couldn't be played by anyone else, so I put the violin and the big band together.
Wow. You know, I'd love to get into more of your music, Carla, and some of your ideas for songs and the titles are so unusual. Now, where did you ever decide to write a tune called Ida Lupino? What gave rise to that?
I think it was that at that point I was writing very difficult avant-garde music, and all of a sudden this sweet melody came out. And it was a little corny and yet beautiful. And it just reminded me of Ida Lupino, the movie actress, who always was a little bit different, wasn't the normal Hollywood star, a little darker, a little different. So I called it Ida Lupino. That's all I can remember.
I remember hearing the tune and thinking to myself, that's really wild. Is it like her? Is it a takeoff on her? And that's what you actually were thinking about her.
I think so, but maybe not during the writing of it, maybe just afterward.
Well, let's play it.
Okay.
Thank you.
You know, that really is a wistful kind of pretty piece. I don't know whether you had that in mind.
Well, I was so disappointed when I wrote that. I wanted it to be fiery and angry and dissonant. And here this awful pretty thing came out of me. Disgusting.
I think it's great because you have an awful lot of angular, dissonant, wild-sounding, angry things. I mean, the soft and pretty ones, I think, are sort of in the minority.
Actually. I try to keep it that way.
Why, for any particular reason? You just...
Well, because people think girls write pretty music and boys write interesting music, and I just would rather write like a boy than a girl.
Well, that's pretty interesting because, you know, male chauvinism is alive and well, isn't it? And nobody could accuse you of writing like a girl. I mean, you can... I probably have more trouble with that than you would as a writer, people saying, oh, you play good for a woman, or you sound just like a man. But you, in your writing, I mean, you can be anything you want to be.
Yeah, you can correct your image.
Correct, you can correct your image. I love that. Or you can do anything you want. Well, you know, I've had so much fun with you guys. Carla, just wonderful to meet you and Steve, to be hanging out with you again after all these years. It's lovely.
Me too, Marion. This has been great. Thanks.
It has been. I was worried, and now I think that was silly.
It was. It was really silly. You know, Carla, he wrote me a nice letter and said you thought that this tune, Ad Infinitum, would make a good tune to include in the show. And I'm glad you did because it's sort of interesting, and I would love to play it with both of you guys.
Well, I chose it because it's in 3-4 and there are three of us. So it was easier for me to figure as a trio than pieces in 4-4, which should be quartets.
Played by quartets, of course. Everybody knows that.
Very logical, I must say. But also, it's sort of a good thought to end the show with because it's like the tune is called Ad Infinitum. And although we're ending, in a way we're not ending because the thoughts about the show and things we'll do in the future are still going on. At least that's the way I'm thinking of it.
Me too.
Well, all right, let's play Ad Infinitum.
Thank you.
Well, I see who has the last word in this group.
Beethoven.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland. Her guests were Carla Bley and Steve Swallow. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Andrew Milano, mastering engineer Bill Sexton, production coordinators Gene Pinkston and Meg Hires. Executive producer Tom Clark. If you wish to contact us, our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1101 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201.